Book of the Week with Claire Armistead on guardian.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Claire Armistead and welcome to my Book of the Week. My Book of the Week this week isn't actually a single book. In fact, it's more a singular author. Anthony Brown has just been appointed, or perhaps that should be anointed, Children's Laureate, the sixth Children's Laureate. Congratulations, Anthony.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
He's an illustrator and writer, and his unforgettable picture book characters include a very special gorilla who can read sign language, a chimp called Willy the Wimp, whose wimpishness doesn't prevent him from squaring up to the neighbourhood bullies, and many other animals. So what is this with animals?
Animals. Children ask me that. They say gorillas or chimpanzees are your favourite animal. And I always say, well, no, human beings are my favourite animal. And I'm aware that we are animals, and I think some people forget that. So very often my animals aren't actually animals at all. They're humans. They're interchangeable.
But you have a particular fondness for chimps and gorillas.
Chimps and gorillas particularly, yeah. And gorillas, actually, more than almost anything else. I just find them incredibly wonderful things to look at. To draw a gorilla is like drawing an old person's face or an old person's body, which is generally more interesting to look at than a young person's because of the lines of experience, the wrinkles and whatever. And gorillas are like that, but even more so. So they're great things to look at and draw. To look into a gorilla's eyes is so much like looking into a human being's eyes. It almost seems as though there's a human being inside looking back at us. And I feel I can sense its intelligence and sensitivity and emotions. And I think that's going to be one of the discoveries of the next few years, just how much more like us they are than we actually realise.
Is there an element of being able to distance yourself from really quite hard issues you often deal with, don't you? But these sort of slightly whimsical anthropomorphic characters enable you to deal with bullying, for example.
Yes, and it isn't something I set out to do, but it does seem to be easy to deal with big issues through gorillas and chimpanzees particularly. Sometimes I'm working on a book, I did a book called Voices in the Park, which was based on an earlier book from 20 years ago called A Walk in the Park, and it was about people going to the park, people's social behaviour. And I got halfway through the new book with the characters as people, and it just wasn't working. They just felt like types of people, the posh woman, the working class man, the mongrel dog and the pedigree dog, and it just seemed that it was a kind of a cliche, and I tried making one of the characters more real. I started painting on the acetate, which I'd covered the picture with, a watercolour picture. I was painting with gouache on top of the acetate to try and make the characters more real, and it just turned into a gorilla, and I was so annoyed. Because I knew the book had absolutely nothing to do with gorillas. I was thinking, well, how are you going to explain? You know, when somebody asks you, how come in the first book, 20 years ago, there were people, now they've changed into gorillas? What is the reason? Well, there isn't one, except that it worked. As soon as I painted the woman, the posh woman, as a posh gorilla, something happened. It lifted the picture, it lifted the book, it made it lighter, it made it stranger. And in a funny kind of way, it made the character more real.
And there's a point in it here as well, isn't there, that they don't represent any one thing, do they? You have those lovely melting brown eyes a lot of your gorillas have. But then in Changes, which deals with the terror of a small boy who is anticipating the arrival of a new sibling, the gorilla, the armchair suddenly develops gorilla hands, and they're really quite threatening and scary.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, exactly. Gorillas can be anything. And the main character, Willy, that I use, when I talk to children in whatever country I talk about, and Willy is very popular universally, I ask them, well, how old do you think Willy is? And they always say he's their age.
Whatever their age is.
Whatever their age is, yes. And of course, because he's not a little English white boy, he can be any nationality too. Mm. So I get more letters about Willy, and they're only a tiny proportion of the books I've done, 6 Willy books out of 40 books altogether. I get more letters about Willy than any other, than all my other books added together.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk a little bit about the way that you marry the pictures up with the words. Do you do both the words and the pictures always?
Not always. I've occasionally illustrated other people's stories, and it's worked at its best when I've known the writer Sometimes publishers like to keep the writer and the illustrator apart and like to keep control. But I think the best, generally the best picture books are those either done by the same person, the writer and who's also the illustrator, or people who know each other quite well, quite often couples, partners.
You did one with Annalena McAfee, who, of course, used to work for The Guardian.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I did two picture books with Annalena. And the first one, when she presented the simple story to me, and it was a very simple story, but a beautiful story, I thought, well, how can I illustrate this? Nothing happens. There's nothing really visual in this book at all. Because Annalena had a house in the same village as me at that time, and it was, we both lived near the sea, we talked about the seaside as being a kind of a background for the story. And we decided that because it's the seaside, there are at least two seasons at the seaside. There's the summer and the winter, the time of holidaymakers and the time of cold, bleak, rather beautiful, empty beaches. And we decided to use that aspect of the background to help to tell the story. So it became more as if I was doing the pictures and the words together myself, a kind of more organic process. So if I was unsure about what somebody might be wearing at breakfast, for instance, I'd ask Annalena and we'd discuss the pictures, we'd discuss the words, so she was happy to change the words as the pictures developed.
So, and that's about a step family, isn't it? It's quite a serious issue.
Oh, yeah, it's a serious issue book, but we were able to put lots of jokes in the background, but not just jokes for the joke's sake. We were able to use them to help to tell the story, to help to tell how somebody was feeling or what they were thinking.
One of my favourites of yours is Piggy Book, right, which I identify with a lot because it actually the mother is the victim, and
yes,
some of us sometimes think of ourselves as being the victims of our family, and it's a mother who is slaving away while her slobbish two sons and husband are gradually turning into pigs.
I'm afraid so. Yeah.
Explain that a bit. I think the way the pictures work in that is really fascinating and very creepy, but also very funny.
Yeah, well, yes, it starts as a very comfortable. I deliberately painted it in a sort of picture book, almost cartoon, very comfortable kind of style. They look very kind of happy together. The man and the two boys stood outside the house, and we don't see the mother to begin with. It said inside the house was his wife, I think. And then whenever we see the mother in the early parts of the book, she's painted in a different style. I use cross hatchings and dull colours. We never saw her face. She was always washing up or ironing or vacuuming or something. And when we saw the boys and the men, they were in very bright colours, looking very happy. And so it was the first time I'd ever painted a book in different styles. And that seemed an exciting thing to do at the time, because traditionally a book has to be painted all the way through in the same style.
And then, of course, what you do is you gradually make more and more piggy details, don't you, which you gradually begin to pick out, like the wallpaper. Suddenly, instead of roses, it's piggy faces.
Yes.
The doorknob has a piggy face. And
yes,
the dad has a piggy sort of
flower
in his lapel.
Yeah. Yes, I like the idea of the details in the background telling parts of the story that the words don't tell it. In fact, that was kind of anticipating what's going to happen. So, and a lot of adults looking at some of those early pictures see a family sitting in a room and move on. Children, I find, notice the details. They notice the little references that I'm making to the Laughing Cavalier on the wall. They notice the pigs in the wallpaper. And that's one of the reasons I like so much working for children, because they're still so visually oriented and they've still got contact with their visual imagination, which is something I think we tend to lose as we get older.
And they're very, very sophisticated, aren't they? For another picture that sort of chilled me to the bone, in Piggy Book, was when you had the Gainsborough Mr. and Mrs. Andrews, with Mrs. Andrews was just invisible in it.
Yeah.
She's been sort of cut out of the picture, which is hanging on the piggy's wall.
And that's just when, Mrs. Piggott's gone as well, isn't it? Yeah, so
yes,
they've both disappeared. Yeah, I like to make reference to whatever interests me, and one of my main interests is art. So I have the Gainsborough on the wall, but it's there for a reason. It's there to help to tell the story. If it was just a little nod or wink, I should say, above the heads of the children, just to say, oh, you know, this is a Gainsborough, you get it, that would be horrible. It doesn't matter that it's a Gainsborough. It doesn't matter that it's Mr. and Mrs. Andrews. The reader doesn't need to know that. As long as it works within the context of the story, it adds something to the story. And then later on, the child might see the original painting, make a connection. And I like the idea of making paintings normal, accessible, part of our everyday life. I'd like to suggest that painters and writers aren't any different to the rest of us. And I certainly say this to children, that any of them, if they want to be, can become painters and writers.
And Willy's Picture, one of the Willy's books, is takes that to the ultimate, doesn't it? Each frame is a sort of reinvention of a masterpiece with Willy in it.
Yeah.
And it's hilariously funny.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I think particularly of Willy being St. George in the Raphael.
Right.
On a white horse. And then the caption says, "I can dream, can't I?"
Yeah. Well, it's based really on as indeed all my books are, on a game I used to play with my brother. We called it the Shape Game. It turns out that children all over the world play this game. But every painter or every writer or every composer of music plays this game, because ultimately it's the essence of creativity. We have something and that we transform it. In the game of the Shape Game, it's an abstract shape which we look at and turn it into a face or a bird or whatever we can see. And children are great at playing that game, better than adults, because they've still got this visual imagination.
Well, what's the relationship of your illustration to art? Are you an artist monkey, a fine artist monkey?
I've never really seen the difference. When I was at art college, there was very much a hierarchy. I did graphic design. And that was sort of in the middle of the hierarchy. The fine artists were at the top, graphic designers in the middle, and there were some sort of non-degree people who were the kind of working class of the art culture. And of course, there was no difference between us. We were the same people. So I think that sometimes the word illustration is used in the context of art as a derogatory term. That's rather illustrative. I don't see that as a criticism at all. I think that what picture books are doing is what all good art is doing. It's communicating, it's dealing with emotions, it's dealing with drawing, with colour. I don't really see the difference.
Do you ever sell individual illustrations?
Occasionally, there are one or two people who do specialise in that thing. We're encouraged not to by our publishers. We're encouraged to keep the artwork together, because occasionally a book needs to be rephotographed for reproduction. But it's become quite for some people, it's quite a useful source of income.
Mm. Now, the big question is whether you're going to have any more time to do this now you're the children's laureate. What sort of duties does that involve?
I think there are four absolute duties that you have to do every year, so that's eight altogether. Of course, everybody has done a lot more than that, and I intend, of course, doing a lot more than that. But one of the things I'm determined to do is to carry on working on picture books at the same time as I do the laureate. So I'm trying to make sure that there are gaps between the laureate events that can be filled with continuous days of working on a picture book, because I can't dip in and out of a picture book in the way that perhaps other writers and poets can, who can write on trains to a certain extent. I can't illustrate on a train. So I'm determined to be able to balance the two things.
Do you have a campaign? I mean, Michael Rosen did reading in schools, didn't he? And Anne Fine did book plates.
Yeah. My campaign would be to promote picture books, obviously. I think they're kind of going through a period of being undervalued and children being pushed on away from picture books at an earlier and earlier age. But looking, I think, is the thing I want to push more than anything else. I don't think we value looking. I think, although we're supposed to live in a very visual age, it's always a moving image, got computer games, television, films, whatever. I don't think we really spend enough time looking at the world and looking at paintings. And there was some research that suggested that we, on average, look at a painting in a museum for 30 seconds and the caption for an awful lot longer. And sometimes I find myself doing that and have to stop myself and just say, no, look at the painting, let the painting work on you. You've got to stand there for at least 5 minutes to take in a painting. And then you can look at the caption, and it may make some links that you can work out or... looking and valuing it.
And I can't think of a better place to start looking than through the whole back catalogue of Anthony Brown, actually. Well, whatever age you are, I have to say that I've really enjoyed looking back through them. I looked at them with my children in a different way.
Mm.
And there are a few books here that I'd be giving to my friends, I think, in future.
That's fantastic.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast. I'm Claire Armistead, and thanks for listening.